This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
Good evening. This is Well on Joy 94.9, brought to you every Monday evening at 8 p.m., presented by the Victorian AIDS Council. My name's Tex, and I'm joined by my lovely co-host, the gorgeous Cal.
Thanks, Tex.
Every week we tackle all things sex, sexual health, and the overall health and well-being of our LGBTI communities. Now, Cal.
Yes, Tex.
What have we got in store this week, Tom?
Well, Tex, as a dabbling sportsman myself, you know I love chatting about diversity in sport.
No.
It's true. We've done a couple shows before talking about diversity in sport and the impact on health and well-being. But This week in particular, we're taking a look at lesbian, bisexual, and queer women in sport and what the changing landscape of women in sport could mean for the health and well-being of lesbian, bisexual, and queer women in our community. Mm-hmm. So, Tex, have you paid attention to what's happening in AFL with the recent launch of AFLW in Melbourne this year?
As it happens, it's someone who is a Melbourne person who has actually never been to the AFL at the MCG, ever. The only time I've seen football played live is at when I was about, about 52 years ago, when I was about seven.
Whoa, Tex, are you telling us your age?
I am indeed.
Anyone with math?
Big 6-0 this year. I was watching a suburban football team play.
Yep.
And I might have watched it once, maybe twice, perhaps three times, and then I found more interest in the swings and the slide. But I do really, I have actually watched on TV, and it has been on commercial TV, which has been a bit shock for me, the Women's League, because I'm very excited about that.
It is very exciting.
For God's sake, about time.
Yeah, well, look.
Young women have had to stop playing at a certain age, about 12 or 14, because that's when young women's sport has ended in football. And although women have continued to play AFL football, but haven't been able to play it really. So I'm really pleased that now that little bit of sexism has been dissipated. And I'm even looking forward to perhaps going to the AFLW grand final.
Are you? That's very exciting. Tex, I'm very impressed.
Well, there you go. Well, there you go.
Well, look, you're not alone at all because, of course, the opening day had over 20,000 people attend at Icon Stadium. And they actually, I believe there was a lockout of about 2,000 people.
At quarter time, they had to lock the doors.
Yep. The police said, we're concerned about numbers. And what a great problem. What a great problem to have. Well, this week is all about women in sport. We'll be joined by James and Melissa from Proud to Play to chat about their efforts in encouraging inclusivity and diversity in sport and what these efforts can mean for the health and well-being of women in our community. And after that, we'll be continuing the conversation with Emma and Jess from Melbourne Surge Water Polo to talk about the club's upcoming event on Saturday, 26th of February, Women in Water Polo, and how their experience has been being a couple of the first female members in a historically gay and inclusive community club.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to a whole lot more. Dear listener, if you'd like to join us in the conversation, we want to hear from you.
Oh, there you go.
Send us an SMS to 0427JOY949 or perhaps send us an email onair@joy.org.au and we get both of those here in the studio so we can react to them straight away. Up next, we're going to be joined by James and Mel from Proud to Play. You're listening to Well here on Joy 94.9.
Joy. We're talking about LGBTI diversity in sport with a look at the inclusion of LBQ women or lesbian, bisexual, and queer women in sport and how sport can improve their health and well-being. We're now joined by James and Mel from Proud to Play. Thanks for joining us. How are you both?
Very good, thank you.
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. So for people who may not know, what is Proud to Play?
So Proud to Play is basically a youth-led sports initiative which tries to increase inclusion and support of LGBTI young people in community sports.
Excellent. And how long has Proud to Play been around?
We're just coming up to our 8th month.
8th month?
Yeah, so it's been fairly new, but it's been really exciting and really full on.
All right, and so what are your roles at Proud to Play at the moment?
So I am currently the CEO of Proud to Play. I just run the day-to-day activities. And Mel?
Yep, I'm the exercise physiologist and look at the health and well-being side. So what we try and do is increase sport participation, but really with the aim to improve people's health and well-being and quality of life.
All right, well, then this next question is for you. Mm-hmm. So how can sport, I mean, a lot of people kind of go, oh, sport, and they keep that kind of, it's a culture in and of itself. But we do know that it helps in health and well-being. How does it do that for LGBTI communities?
Well, it does that in 3 main ways. So physical activity improves physical health, mental health, and also social health. But with sport, it's because it's done within a club or a team setting, we really focus on the social connectedness that you can get through playing sport. And we know that in particular lesbian women play sport for that social connectedness and that opportunity to develop friendships.
Okay. Great. And you've been doing a bit of research as well out there in kind of the sport and inclusion realm as well. What's some of that been so far?
Yes. So I was involved in the Come Out to Play study in 2010 now. So it was a while ago, but there hasn't been a lot in the space. So I guess the results would still apply today. But the biggest thing that we found is that in our community, women tend to play team sport, whereas the men in our community tend to do individual sports.
Hmm. Were there any indicators for why that might be?
So we think there are a number of reasons that would, you know, that interplay, but definitely there's the sense that there's perceived fear of harassment and even violence from men, whereas women, I guess, have more of that freedom because of these existing stereotypes. It's actually become a safe space for them.
Okay. Well, and by existing stereotypes, is it that sport is basically for tomboys and for butch guys? It's a hyper mask.
Yes.
Mask for mask.
Yes. And with that, there's advantages, but there are also disadvantages to that. But it's just quite interesting that has actually fostered this safe and welcoming environment.
Okay, so with that in mind, you were saying that, you know, women were gravitating towards team sport where men were going towards individual sports and potentially because of fears of, like, BIMBY being a more hostile or homophobic environment. What about with queer sporting clubs? How does that play out? Because obviously you think that's a safe and welcoming environment. Are men still engaging with those clubs to some degree, or are they still kind of gravitating? That individual thing, was that about just the general population?
That's the general population, okay. Yes. So what through Proud to Play and the work we've been doing and engaging the community, what we're seeing at events, particularly the queer sporting events, so through Team Melbourne, is that they're dominated by men.
Yep.
And even in our own Proud to Play events, they are dominated by men. So we know that there are women out there playing sport, but they're more in the community setting.
Okay.
But we actually want more women involved with us, because we need those role models.
Now, when you first started talking about Proud to Play, you mentioned it's for young women. What does young mean in this instance? Is it is there a particular, like, 18 to 26 or what?
Our age bracket is about 14 to 24.
Right.
So we definitely attract a younger audience. However, all of our social events and all of our sporting events are aimed to be all inclusive.
Okay.
So we've had people come down from the ages of 12 to the ages of 60 who just want to come down, compete, learn how to play and be part of a safe environment. So as Mel was saying, the LGBTI sports teams are so safe and there's that environment of love and acceptance already fostered there. So what we find is that people just want to come and be a part of a safe environment. Doesn't matter what age they are, sexuality or gender identity, but they want to be part of a safe and comfortable feeling.
Okay. With looking at that age range, I think as a listener, you know, you'd think, pitting a 12-year-old against like a 40-year-old, you know, it could be a bit dangerous. But I imagine these are the sports that you guys are playing are lower impact and whatnot and safe for
yeah, you know. All of our sports are innovated to okay. We don't like any competition, which I know is hard for some people, especially maybe in this room who are competitive.
Sure.
We don't do any competition, and we really try and stick with an innovative sport that we don't score. We're just there to play. We're there to get some exercise, and we're there to advance that mental health.
Okay. And I imagine there'd be some barriers being broken as well. If we've talked about, Mel, you mentioned that there is that barrier of thinking that sport is maybe perhaps a homophobic and a not a welcoming environment. So I suppose your initiatives are really to kind of break that barrier, I suppose it sounds like as well.
Yeah, exactly right. So we work on both education and participation. So we educate the clubs who we're going into and we're working with. And then we increase participation by having these all-inclusive events.
Well, okay, we've got plenty more to tackle, and we are talking with James and Mel from Proud to Play about diversity in sport. We want to get you in on the conversation as well. Shoot us an email at onair@joy.org.au or send us an SMS at 0427-JOY949.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. My name's Tex, and I'm joined by my gorgeous co-host, Cal. And as well as that, we have James and Mel from Proud to Play as we chat about LGBTI inclusion in sport. Now, either of you can answer this question. There's been a lot of buzz in Melbourne about the launch of AFL Women's League in recent weeks. What sort of impact do you see this having on the broader sporting community? Is it going to bring more people in? Is it going to make women feel more comfortable about playing sport?
I think any time we get a female-centred sport come in, especially something so high-profile as AFL, it really increases that role modelship that you have that young girls look up to. Mm-hmm. And you always want to look up to see someone who you can be and strive for the best and see where they are. So having this elite sporting situation, and we have the WBBL with the Women's Big Bash League as well, with huge mentors who are now available for these younger girls. And a young girl who can now look up to them and say, hey, I can be that person. And that a few of them have come out as LGBTI is just even more amazing.
That's awesome. Now, you mentioned cricket here. And so I think, you know, the profile, obviously, when something's kicking off in Melbourne, AFL is really sort of king in Victoria. But you were talking before, when we were talking before the show, that cricket's actually been making some strides forward quite before this.
Yeah, the WBBL has been on, I think it's Channel 7. Oh, I've got to get me my Channel 10. Channel 10 for the past few years now. And they've been showing with huge ratings. And the WBBL is just getting the same amount of attraction as the BBL, which is the Men's Big Bash League. There is some amazing role models, some amazing LGBTI role models as part of the WBBL, and some amazing co-hosts as well who are now hosting and reporting on the games themselves. So it's also one of the most advanced women's sports. So it's cricket, women's cricket in Australia has actually the highest rate of participation of any other women's sports.
Okay, so with that in mind, do you think the landscape for being out and proud players may be any different for LBQ women in AFL, women or Big Bash League, than for same-sex attracted and queer men, sort of in AFL or the straight, or the, I don't want to say straight counterparts, but I suppose the male counterpart competitions? Do you think there's a difference there?
There's a huge difference.
A huge difference. Okay, okay.
There's a big difference.
Yep.
I think women playing sport already break that mold.
Yep.
And so it's seen as easier for them to come out because of that stereotype that's existed. And for men, it's the culture in sport is still so conservative. Mm. And I don't think that it's ready for AFL or cricket, for that matter, for a professional to come out.
I suppose that echoes what you were saying earlier from some of the research that you had, because if you think about the out sportsmen out there at the moment, really the only ones that you really know of that happened before, I mean, there's a lot that happened after retirement, but other than that, they're mostly individual sports. So you had Matt Mitchum and whatnot, who's of course diving. You've got, you know, Ian Thorpe, who's a swimmer, and that was well and truly after retirement as well. But yeah, really with any of the other sports, I suppose, unless it's happening at a grassroots level in like the case of VFL and Jason Ball.
Yeah, it definitely follows the same, and just it reflects at community level, at the elite level. So someone that's gone through as a young person through community sport has learnt really to hide their sexuality and has perceived it to be unsafe. And I think well, I know from my personal experience that you you become good at hiding yourself and when you don't feel like it's safe. And then I think when you get to a higher level, it just becomes even more important.
So you were saying from your own experience, what sport did you play, just out of curiosity?
I grew up playing tennis and football, Aussie rules.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was one of those girls who had to stop playing. And then, yeah, I had to stop playing when I was about 12 and then picked it up again when I was 18.
How does that conversation, I mean, happen where this, does someone sort of say, okay, you're done now?
I think about it all the time. I've been reflecting on this with the women's AFL coming out, and I look back and how was it ever okay to just have nowhere for girls to go? And it just was.
So in Australian sports, especially in a community level, we actually have a statute of limitations kind of after the age of 13. So we live in such a pink and blue world where one sport is male, one sport is female, that when you get to that age of 13, they can actually discriminate by sexes and by genders. So you can, for example, men can't really play netball after the age of 13 because there's nowhere for them to go. And that's perfectly allowed. There's no discriminatory clauses against that.
It's strange. I mean, obviously, I grew up in the States, and we still have gendered sports as well. But it seems a little bit more distinct. I think when I thought about the sports kind of growing up, you know, sure, gridiron sort of had, was a largely male sport. But you'd see like community newspapers covering female players playing at the high school level. There was exception made across the country here and there. And there is some women's kind of gridiron and women's rugby and whatnot happening. But I felt like there were a lot more when I came to Australia. There were a lot more like netball. I mean, isn't really. I mean, there probably is a whole following of it in the U.S. somewhere, but it's not a high-profile sport, not a really common one. And I think here it did feel a little bit more like there were more kind of gender-specific sports across the board, as opposed to having, you know, like when I was in uni and whatnot, women's ice hockey was, you know, happening at the same time that men's ice hockey was. So it was very interesting to kind of find that out. So I guess I just wonder, too, with some of these sports being gendered, you know, have you noticed a difference in the ability to track interest and engage LGBTI communities? Because how does that play out when, you know, individual identities sometimes break those molds to begin with? How has that been with your guys' initiatives across various sports?
We've always had a harder time attracting female LGBTI participants than male. And it's really across the board. Everybody we've talked to who are in similar roles or have similar understandings of the world around us all say the same thing, that they have a real struggle getting young LGBTI women to come and be involved in sports.
Okay. And have they had any understanding of why, that what those barriers are?
Not really.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, look, we'll have a minute to think about that.
Joy 94.9.
You are never fully dressed without a smile, and this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I'm Cal, joined by my co-host Tex, and we're talking to James and Mel from Proud to Play about the inclusion of lesbian, bisexual, queer women, female players in sport, and how this impacts the health and well-being of our community. So before SIA, we were talking about how some of the clubs have had difficulty recruiting female players. This is the LGBTI community clubs. You know, have you guys any, has SIA given you any inspiration or thoughts to why that might be or what some of the barriers are?
There are some barriers that I find more interesting than others, being we all, the entire Australian community has a set of barriers that that limit sports and physical activity participation. But I think when you look at the specific barriers that target female women in general, we know that women have poorer mental health and well-being than men within our community. And particularly the age group that we look at from 14 on up to 25, is there a significant body image issues that affect girls and women.
Okay, so it might come into competitive sportswear and whatnot, that there's this consciousness.
Yes, and there, you know, the same rules apply, that if you're a girl, a woman playing a sport, then you need to look a certain way. You need to have the right physique, and not everyone fits that mold. So there are some specific ones, but we know that with poorer mental well-being, you're going to be less active. It's more difficult for you. And then there's the added pressure of being a teenager as well, and sports versus the academic pursuits that you need to decide.
And I suppose to some degree what you said earlier about a lot of lesbians, bisexual, queer, female identifying players are already playing in other sports and not specifically LGBTI clubs, so maybe the exceptions to some of those barriers, they're already integrated into the system if that they're that keen.
That's right.
So that perhaps is what leads to it along the way. Look, it's been very, very interesting, and I'll be keen to kind of hear more, and as more research hopefully comes out. You mentioned your study back in 2010, and there's been a little bit here and there. I know, like, there was the Out on the Fields investigating homophobia in sport, but any whispers of, you know, more research going into that area? Are you hopeful?
I'm hopeful that what we're going to see now is a shift away from studying homophobia and discrimination and focusing more on what does our community have to be achieved through participation in sport and physical activity.
Now, we have a listener at the moment who's out there wanting to get involved. What's the website?
Our website is proudtoplay2.org.au, or you can hit us up on Facebook. That's Proud to Play.
So if someone went to their favourite search engine, perhaps the one starting with G, and typed in proud, numeral 2, play, it should lead them directly to that particular, to the website.
It definitely does. I looked it up today.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, well, James, well done.
There you go. And so if people are interested, they can look up to the latest with you guys. Any other news from Proud to Play at the moment?
Yes, we have some very exciting news.
Oh, okay.
James, you can share that.
So we were just granted from Vic Health, in association with Cricket Victoria, the Vic Health Innovation Challenge for 2017. Mm-hmm. So we're basically doing a 16-month program to help include LGBTI young people, that's LGBTI, so same-sex attracted and gender diverse young people, into cricket, and do an education roadshow throughout Victoria, including rural and metro areas, to talk about how they can better understand LGBTI young people, their needs, their specific wants in sport, and how they can make it more inclusive.
That's incredible news. And congratulations to both of you and the broader team.
Yes, thank you.
There you go. Well, look, watch this space and check out Proud to Play. So proud, the number 2, play.org. Is it .au?
Yes. .au.
There you go. Big thank you to James and Melissa from Proud to Play. Tex, what's happening next?
Well, up next, we're going to be able to talk to two women from the Melbourne Surge Water Polo Club about their upcoming event aimed at getting women in the water. And this coming weekend, it's Women in Water Polo. That's coming up.
Joy 94.9.
This is Whoa, Whoa, Well on Joy 94.9. My name's Tex, and I'm joined by my co-host, the lovely Kel. And we're talking about lesbian, bisexual and queer women in sport and the effects it has on the health and well-being of those communities. We're now joined by two female water polo players from the Melbourne Surge Water Polo Club. Jess and Emma, welcome to OOL. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tex.
Thanks for having us.
Good to have you with us. Now, how long have you both been involved with the Melbourne Surge Water Polo team group?
Okay, well, just thinking back, I joined their rookies program back in 2015. That's how I first came into water polo. I wanted to try something new and, wanted to get more involved in the queer community. So came across the rookies program, which was perfect because I was a bit intimidated, didn't know anything about water polo. So it was a good introduction. And, so a couple of years now. And I'm now playing and training and all of that, so it's good.
Very good. And what about you, Jess?
And I joined, wanted to get in on the action, so I joined last year with the Surge Rookies program.
Okay, and so you both mentioned, I think, touched on the Rookies program, a little bit of an overview of what that is like?
Sure. So it's a 10 or 12 week program, I think it is now, where you can come and learn the skills of water polo, make some really good friends, go through the awkward things of, learning how to tread water again and throw a ball and keep your head above water. Yeah, with a bunch of really interesting people and start getting involved in water polo.
Mm. And the program's designed to build upon every week. So, you know, you're not thrown in the deep end, so to speak. In the first week, you're kind of, starting some basic skills, and then you build those each week. And then at the end, you play a bit of a game against each other. So it's really good. And there's always the social drinks afterwards, which is always fun.
And so you touched on it. Both of you had never played water polo before. Were you particularly big swimmers or anything like that? Or
I swam. I've always been a swimmer. Yep. And so the swimming part of side of things was not difficult for me, though it certainly is a different set of skills and different level of fitness required. The speed of because you swim a lot slower than you can throw a ball. So I'd played a couple of games of water polo in high school. But mostly it was just swimming for me. And for Emma?
Yeah, I'd never played. Actually, I guess growing up I'd always played netball, and I kind of, I never went to a school where we had water polo or anything like that. So, I didn't really know much about water polo at all. So, but it appealed to me because it's low impact, and I've not got a very good ankle. So it's good in that respect. So,
Now, we've talked to lots of men who have been involved in the water polo club. What was it like? How did you feel about joining a club that was primarily comprised of gay men, say, to start with?
Sure. It was a little bit intimidating turning up on the first day of the rookies program turning up to a swimming pool where there are a lot of men in their bathers.
Yeah.
And then realising very quickly that all the other guys that were there were also just as nervous as I was. So everyone's been really open and welcoming, and the fact that, there are not many women involved has never been an issue. So right. It was intimidating to begin with, but... Yeah.
So when you turned up to that first rookie session for both of you, was it a mix of men and women? And was it a mix of women, men and women, or just women?
Not for me. It was all men, and there was just me. But right. I was pre-warned by that. I was the president at the time, Ash. I think he was just involved in setting up the program, and he had a lot of communication with me, and I was a bit nervous, and I asked, if there were many women going along, and he was honest and said no, but come along anyway. And that initial correspondence before the training kind of helped me ease into it, and I kind of knew even though there wasn't other women, I would still feel comfortable and welcome, so that was really good.
There you go. Well, look, we are going to continue the conversation with Emma and Jess around diversity and inclusivity of LGBTI female players in sport with the Melbourne Surge Water Polo Club. Emma and Jess, we will be talking about the upcoming Women in Water Polo event on February 26th.
Joy 94.9.
Hey there, it's Jace, head of Joy Production, here to talk up our Joy podcast service. Last month, our community downloaded around 34,000 Joy podcasts. Check them out when you get a bit of downtime and find out why our audience is loving what's on offer. Visit joy.org.au/podcasts to view our most recently posted episodes. Head to iTunes or your podcast app to find your favorite program. A mix of content you might have missed live, and a range of fresh podcast material you'll only find on podcast. It's easy to subscribe to the program of your choice, whether you're viewing at joy.org.au or on your phone, which means you won't miss any future episodes. Get away from your busy day. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and via iTunes.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I'm Cowan with my lovely co-host, Tex, and we're talking about women in water polo with two members of Victoria's only LGBTI water polo club, the Melbourne Surge, Jess and Emma. Now, before we had that little break there, we were talking about your guys' roles in the... your roles in the clubs and your experiences, and I know that the female, like as far as female club search, doesn't have a competitive female team. What's that been like so far for the club? Is there, is that what this event is all about coming up on the weekend?
We would love to have more women involved. We'd love to put together a competitive team, or at least have a few more women around to,
train with and,
So does that mean neither of you have had a chance to compete yet?
Because I wanted to continue building on my skills and actually playing competitive competitive games. I've joined a mainstream social women's team out in the eastern suburbs. They're really lovely and it's been really fun. But, it would be good to, build more female LGBTI players in the competition. So. Yeah.
So when you are practicing and play and doing
training.
The training, that's the word I wanted, Dahl, thank you. When you're doing the training, you're with the boys. You're training with the boys.
Yes.
I've seen some photos of players playing water polo, and I've seen photos of people practicing, training in water polo, and they do some dirty tricks, those boys. Does that happen with women? And are women encouraged to then yank and grab and pull and put the other people off?
We're not encouraged, but it does happen.
Good.
It does happen.
Equality,
but
I like
anything
that.
Underwater is, kind of goes. So.
Stays underwater. Yeah. Right.
That said, training with Serge, that's never been an issue.
I must admit, as a water polo player, I think the few times that I have ever trained against a female player, and more often than not, you are so, as a male player, you're kind of very, hands off. First of all, you don't do tricks against your teammates in most instances. Maybe some ankle grabbing to pull people back a little bit, but, it doesn't make too much of a difference there. But, Emma, in competition, have you found, do women get a bit handsy and a bit, tricky there?
They can a little bit, but our team, because we're all kind of learning together, we formed from a social women's group that Vic Water Polo started, and we kind of formed a team together. We're part of Nutterwadding Water Polo Club. And so we're all learning together and, apparently the umpires or the referees refer to us as the most friendliest club or team. So, nice.
Sounds very friendly and inviting. Yeah. Can we expect the same for this weekend for the Women in Water Polo event?
Yes.
So what's that going to be like?
It's a combination of land and swim training and learning some different skills, meeting other women, and there'll be a few people from the Surge Club coming down to help run the event. I think it'll be mostly an opportunity to meet other people and have a bit of a try of water polo if you haven't before, or if you have and it's been a long time, mm-hmm. It's a bit of a refresher. So.
And that's happening this Saturday, the 26th of February?
Sunday.
Thank you for correcting me. Yeah. Still the 26th of February?
The 26th of February at Point Ormond Beach.
Yeah.
What time does it kick off?
1 p.m.
And if people want more details, they can head to the Melbourne Surge Facebook page, I believe, or the Melbourne Surge website.
They can. Yes.
Yep.
Okay. What is the Facebook page to the uninitiated? What is the website?
So melbournesurge.org, I believe, is the club website.
Yes.
And I think if you just search on Facebook for Melbourne Surge, it should come up without a problem.
There you go.
So if people are interested, or if any women are interested, they're more than welcome to come down on this Sunday. And if Surge gets enough women, do you think that they'll field a competitive team?
Yeah. We'd love to.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like a great opportunity. So anyone listening out there that is keen, get onto Facebook look for Melbourne Surge, or head to melbournesurge.org. I guess lastly, as a final kind of thought and question about your participation in growing a women's team, do you think that there are any benefits for having a lesbian, bisexual, and sort of queer women's team, or an LGBTI female players team through Surge? I mean, Emma, you've kind of been able to kind of get into a social group that, you seem pretty accepted and integrated, and it seems the friendliest club in your division. Do you think that, is there a need for an LGBTI women's team?
I think there is. Certainly, there's some challenges, I guess, in terms of, with Surge building a women's team within the club, it's predominantly been known as kind of a gay men's water polo club. So, like the conversation that you had before we came on air with James and Mel, was it, around women in sport. I guess water polo is not a common sport. It wasn't something that, as I mentioned earlier, that I kind of came across growing up. So it's certainly not widely promoted in mainstream media. So there's some challenges there. And Jess, we were talking earlier about, I guess, body image and... yeah.
And even as an adult, just being less likely to try new things. So it's harder to attract women probably into many sports, not just water polo. Yeah. So I think, yeah, I think there is a real advantage in having a queer women's team or queer team full stop as a safe space and somewhere safe to try.
Well, fantastic. We do wish you all the best for Sunday, the 26th of February, for Women in Water Polo. We hope that you get the numbers and that Surge gets to field a team into the women's competition. We have been talking to Emma and Jess from the Melbourne Surge Water Polo Club. And if you want to get involved, head to melbournesurge.org or look them up on Facebook.
And just before you go, where is it on Sunday again?
Point Ormond Beach.
Good eye.
Around the bay. It's looking to be about 25 degrees. Mm-hmm. It'll be a perfect day for
weather.
It.
Perfect weather for it. So, look, thank you, Emma and Jess, and also thanks to James and Melissa from Proud to Play as we continue the conversation about the inclusion of lesbian, bisexual, and queer women in sport. And, Tex, before we go this week, I have to plug, lastly, I had the pleasure of being in Sydney this past weekend. You've, you know, made a remark before about my sunburnt nose.
Your sunburnt nose, of course,
right.
Yes.
That's right. And so I got to go to Fair Day yesterday.
And how was it? How was Fair Day? Was it majorly different to Carnival Day here in Melbourne?
I'm going to say something very controversial here. Look, I think, to be fair to Mardi Gras, they had to move sites this year. So they previously had always held Fair Day in Victoria Park, which is a very wide open space just off of the Sydney Uni campus. Lovely site. This year they moved it to the Camperdown Memorial Rest Park, I think is the official name. And it's where they hold the Newtown Festival, if anyone's ever is familiar with Sydney. And it's a great ground, but I do think that it has a weird sort of circuitous kind of footprint. And there were a lot of really narrow passages, and it just didn't have that expanse. And look, I just, you know, some of the sections, I just thought, you know, I mean, we do a good fair. Carnival is, as we've got Carnival down. That's our kind of big landmark event here. So I do have to give, if it was a Fair Day versus Carnival thing, I mean, Carnival definitely wins out. It's by far just a bit more of a production, really. But then when you compare the parades, then you get into a whole other thing. So look, they can have their Mardi Gras parade, but we certainly have Carnival. So
I believe next weekend in Sydney, there's something happening though.
Absolutely.
I mean, so, there's loads of things happening because it's Mardi Gras season, but there's a particular sporty thing.
Well, we've been talking about lesbian, bisexual, and queer women's health this week, specifically around sport. But if you're in Sydney next weekend or this coming weekend, so you can't make it to Women in Water Polo, I do encourage you to check out, it's called Breastville, an amazing day and night festival celebrating lesbian, bisexual, and queer women's health and well-being in Merrickville Town Hall. It's a pretty unique and entertaining lineup, but it's literally going all day. I think it starts at 10 a.m. and goes well into the evening. For more details, head to www.acon.org.au/Breastville.
And I think we should say Breast I Ville.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, there's a sneaky eye in there to check out on as
so
well.
So really, if you're going to your favorite search engine, perhaps the one starting with G, you could just type in Acon and Breast I Ville, but Breastville is one word, and that should take you to Acon's site where you'll be able to find out more information.
It's a great lineup, and I definitely encourage you to check it out if you find yourself in Sydney, as many of us are during the Mardi Gras season.
Indeed. And you know what, Carl?
Yep.
If our dear listeners missed any part of the show, you can catch up to the show and previous episodes of Well, Well, Well online by looking at the podcasts. We have a fantastic podcaster, David, who puts our shows together. We always say thank you to the stellar Joy podcaster, David. If you want to find out, just go to joy.org.au/well-well-well, and that will lead you to all of the podcasts from all of the previous shows going back into the prehistoric era, I would suggest.
Prehistoric.
Yeah. Oh, now, we're on air again next week, Carl.
We are on next week. Well, at least part of the team is on next week. I'm not.
Won't
on.
Be you. Won't
it
be
won't
me.
Be me. Oh, well, it'll be the rest
exciting
of the
new
team.
Voices to hear.
There you go. Well, look, I don't know if there'll be new voices. There'll be old hats at this. But anyhow, join us next week as the team is back on the air from 8 p.m. on Monday here on Joy 94.9. That is well for another week. Good night and keep well.
And I thought when it read here, keep well, that it actually said sleep well. So people sleep well as you're keeping well. Cheerio for now. Buddy. Bye. And it's relax. Coming up very soon.
It is. Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Oh, Frankie Goes to Hollywood takes me back to the dance floors. But I'll be in the dance floor. You be in your dance floor. Cheerio, everyone. Bye-bye.
And after Frankie Goes to Hollywood is broad, you're listening to...
With Sonia. Sensational.
We do love Sonia. Look, you're listening to Well for here on Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council presents Well on Joy, the show that's all about sex, health and well-being. Health and well-being.
Joy.
Monday nights from 8 p.m. on Joy and available via podcast at joy.org.au/well.
It's your program for expert advice, real stories, honest, informed conversations and unvarnished opinion.
So join us for Well on Joy.
Proudly sponsored and presented by the Victorian AIDS Council.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.